Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Linda, and this is Soul in the City, where we inspire to take you higher and higher in the spirit. I have an exciting show today and an exciting guest. We'll be talking about sobriety and the freedom we have in sobriety today. We'll kind of talk about that and what it is. And I hope that this reaches out to anybody that is kind of going through right now, that you will be encouraged, you will be uplifted. And if, even if you're struggling to that point right now, we just want to encourage you to keep trying, keep fighting, because there's some people on the other side waiting for you to be freedom, waiting for you to be free in that sobriety. Before we even start with our guests, we're going to play the song, Your Ladder Will Be Greater, by Martha Menenzi. Let's listen in. All right, and that was Martha Menenzi, and your best is yet to come. Your latter will be greater than your past. I just feel the need to say a prayer to lift up everybody. I'm just going to ask everybody to take a deep breath. It's Saturday, and I know a lot of people probably have been racing around, and it's time to calm down, so we'll take another deep breath. Father God, we just thank you for the opportunity to spread the goodness of your word, to spread the goodness of how good you are. And Lord, if there is somebody who is struggling right now, we just hope that a word spoken today will uplift, will encourage, and will let someone know that they're not alone. And if there are family members that are struggling with this dear person, that they would be encouraged, that they would hold on, that they know that all the answers are in you. If nothing else, if somebody would get out of this program, that it's you. It's all about you. You can change lives. You can turn things. It's never too late. And your latter is better than your past. And your past can be left behind. Well, Lord, we lift up everybody that's listening, and we say, less of us and more in you, and you be glorified. All these we say in our precious Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Hello, Amen. Geraldine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. I'm so excited to have you on the program. We've known each other for a little while, and I think you're a phenomenal woman that has overcome and gone through some things, but you are standing strong, standing tall, and are really a testimony to a lot of people of what you can do. And your ladder is really, that's the song for you, your ladder is better than your past.
And that is so true. And first, I want to thank God, and I want to thank God for this opportunity that he's allowed me to have tonight. So for me, today is all about God.
Well, good.
I can't do this without him.
Yeah, and I think that for a lot of people, that's the key thing right there. Not a key, but it's just the key to, you know, overcoming not only through drugs, sometimes even addiction. For some women, it's being in relationships can be an addiction. So sometimes that key is learning to love yourself, and then and you do that through learning to love God, learning to love yourself, and then to treat yourself well. So talk to us a little bit about you, Geraldine. I'm going to just let you start by kind of telling us a little bit about your story.
Okay, well, I was born and raised in Jersey, New Jersey. Some people down south would call me a Yankee, but I was born. I've been here long enough, so I'm called something different, but I am a child of God's, and I know that today. It started in New Jersey, where I was raised by a single parent, my mother. My mother was raped, so I'm a rape baby. She had me, and she... Today, I know she did the best that she could with what she had. And she didn't have many tools. So I was raised by my mother, and my mother was an alcoholic. She was a woman that worked and took care of me, and she was a woman that sometimes I didn't see. So I suffered, and I still suffer, but it's better today. From abandoned issues, neglection, and rejection. My mother worked, and she kept me at every doctor, the eye doctor, the physical doctor, the dentist. And I believe that's the way she just did to try to protect me and make sure I would be okay. But like I said, I was, you know, my mother was an alcoholic, and some days I would come home and she wouldn't be there, and sometimes she wouldn't be there for a week, and I would pretend that she was home because I was her only child that she had. She didn't have any more but me. Never got pregnant again. It was just me. And I would come home sometimes and skipping home from school and open the door and say, Mom, there would be no answer. I'd run around the house we lived in. Mom. And I would pretend she was there. And I wouldn't tell her sisters, my aunts and my uncles, or her mother. and I would comb my hair, and I would run to the door. Well, let me back up a little. When my mother drank, she sang. She was a beautiful singer. She sang in churches and bars and barbecues and weddings. Beautiful voice. And I didn't take that voice from her, but she had a beautiful voice. And I would listen for that voice coming home at night from drinking. And I would peek out the door. I would listen to cars pull up, hoping it was her. And I would, and sometimes she would show up about a week later, sometimes 2 weeks later. And I had doll babies and a dollhouse, and they were my companions. Yet I was a very angry girl, couldn't wait till my mother came home. And at that time, because it's about telling the truth and not being ashamed of where I was, because I'm on this journey now and at a better place. I'm grateful for that. But this is the things I experienced. And I would get angry at God and cuss God out and couldn't wait till my mother come in to cuss her out. And she would come in the door with gifts, clothes, and I would lay in the bed and pretend I was asleep. And she would come in the room, and my middle name is Dawn, so she called me Dawny Pawnee. And she would tickle me, and I would pretend I was asleep. And when she would have these gifts, I would forget about all that she had done, what I experienced. And I didn't know as a child what I should experience, but that was my experience as a child. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to move up a little in my journey. I went to different churches because my father was the mailman, and he really was the mailman. And he would tap me on my head and say, "Hi, little girl." How I found out, because my mother told me that was my father. So, and I felt different and less than, because I only had a mother, and I didn't have a mother and father. So I lived this way with my mother for a long time with her drinking, and sometimes I would get up in the morning and go to the bar and knock on the bar door, and my mother would come to the door. She was either in there singing and drinking or out in front of the bar fighting. And after that, I was, because I was only child, I would run to my aunt's house, and over my aunt's house, there was a lot of things that I was attracted to. First of all, her children, her having a husband, and then not having a husband but having a man in the house. And then I was introduced to alcohol and drugs. Mm-hmm. And before I was introduced to that, I always had a curiosity about church. And I need to say this too. My mother, she did those things I just mentioned, but she would send me to Sunday school every Sunday, wake me up early, and tell me go to Sunday school and stay in church till it's over. So that helped me with the God thing. Mm-hmm. And I held on to that, and I tried different ways of finding that God and that feeling that I wanted for God. The feeling that I didn't have when I thought about my mother, and I would get angry at God. But she sent me to church, and she taught me the prayer. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep if I die before I wake. And so she gave me little good things. But back to the house where my aunt lived, I was introduced to people shooting her on, drinking, smoking marijuana, and I'll never forget, I was 8 years old, and I was telling one of my cousins I wouldn't mind trying that. And I was jumping rope outside like a little girl, a normal little girl, hopscotching, and I remember jumping rope, and my cousin came out over to the playground and asked me, was I ready? And I said, ready for what? She said, they said we can smoke some weed and we can drink. And I said, okay. And I told my little girlfriends I would be back. I never returned to that childhood. I never returned to that playground or that little girl that was angry and looking for God. I went to a deep, dark, spirit in my life at 8 years old. I picked up alcohol and I picked up marijuana, and I had gaps in my using. I would stop and I would try church. And I would try so many different other religions that's about God. And I tried so many ways. And every time I got a high expectation of the preacher, the minister, the imam, because I've tried all different types of religion. I've tried Christianity. I've tried Islam. I've tried different ways of trying to get in touch with normal way of living. And every time I would be let down because of high expectations, I would run back to something that numbed me and took the pain away, which was drugs. And that went on for a long time. At the age of 13, my mother found out that she had cancer. And she got depressed about it, and she signed herself in a mental institution. And my aunt and them came and told me that my mother had a nervous breakdown. And I asked, could they take me to see her? And they took me to see her. And during that time, I was still suffering from abandonment issues, neglect, and rejection. So I had got interested in a young man that used to hang over my aunt's house where all the drugs were and the alcohol and that deep, dark place. And I got pregnant at 13 years old with my first child. And then I got pregnant at 15 with my second child. And that's when I married this man, and I found out he was a heroin addict. And that made me angry. And my mother was, she signed for me to get married at a young age because, you know, she said she didn't want any more children being born without me being married. So it's certain moral values that my mother had and she passed on to me, but certain things she just didn't have the skills or the tools. And I look at it as a result of what happened to her getting pregnant. And God mm-hmm. knows best. I don't. But this went on for years, the drugs for me. I call it disease, mm-hmm. but I know it's from the devil. I already know that. And the reason I call it disease because of the spiritual program, the 12-step program, that God guided me to help me.
Right.
But it also takes God in all areas for me today. So I went on this spree of using, and then I would have moments of stopping, and it continued for a very long time. And 8 years ago, because October the 12th this year, I'll be celebrating 8 years.
And I'm so proud of you. That's awesome.
Thank you so much. And it's truly, truly a God thing. And God guided me to these rooms. I'll tell you a little bit about that. Is it okay if I jump up to another
you
area?
You can jump in because I'm going to just let you go. We got the show for about an hour. We got about 38 minutes. But if we go
good.
A little bit over, it's okay.
So I'll go back to that part.
Okay, go back to it.
Yeah, so I wanted to find things that made me feel good during this process of getting high, being angry, being the only child, mother dying, and raising two children to find out that their father was an addict. I didn't know anything about this disease. I just knew I didn't want to be an addict. And I ended up being an addict. And I'm still an addict, but I'm a recovering addict by the grace of God. And I'm so grateful for that. But I didn't stay with the children's father long because he was very abusive. And I left him and went and got a job. And I've always been a survivor. And I got a job and I got my own place. And my mother ended up moving with me. She was on radiation at this time in chemo. And my mother at that time had just changed to this person that I didn't know. I mean, I knew she drank. I knew she left me. But when she was around, she was kind and she tickled me and hugged me. But she was on doctor's medicine. And she just changed to this person I didn't know. And she was very angry and very sick. And I called the doctor one day and I asked him, I said, my mom is acting strange and talking to me all kind of ways and cussing me out and saying all kind of things I've never heard her say to me. And I was 19 years old at that time. And he said, I told your mother and your aunt that you were old enough to know. And I said, old enough to know what? And the doctor said that your mother only had 6 months to live or less. And my whole body shook. And I had the phone in my hand and I dropped it. And I could hear the doctor saying, hello, hello. And I picked up the phone. I cried and anger came back. And I said, nobody told me. He said, I told him to tell you. So after I found that out about my mother, she lasted maybe 2 more weeks. And I was there when my mother died. I watched her take her last breath. And after that, I felt even more alone. I was very angry because I found out late. I was angry at my family. I isolated for a whole year with 2 little children, and I took a lot of my anger out on them. I beat them. I beat them because I was young getting pregnant. I beat them because their father was on drugs. And I beat them because I didn't graduate from high school. And I beat them for so many reasons. And I was angry because my mother had died. And I didn't know until real close to her death. So I went back to what I only knew best to do, which was normal for me because of the product of my environment was alcohol and drugs. So I went back and I started getting high again, and I was very angry. And my mother had a boyfriend that treated her like dirt. Because at that time, she died in the 70s. At that time, cancer was, people looked at cancer like they did AIDS. And so he wasn't in her life. And when she passed away, I didn't even tell him that she passed away. I told him she's alive. You can come see her. And that's how angry I was because from the process that where I'm at today, I've learned through this process that I suffer from abandonment issues, neglection, and rejection. And when I've always got hurt, I get angry, and I retaliate. And I don't care who I hurt because hurt people hurt people. That was me at that time. And I keep saying going back to now because I'm not that person. And I keep saying that because I have to always block the devil trying to come in here in my spirit, in my surroundings today, even when I'm
telling
my story.
And you need to say that because you're not that person. I know another Geraldine,
no.
And that's not the person
I
know.
Yes, I'm not that person today, and I'm so grateful to God. So I went on a dark journey for years, and I didn't abandon my children. I took care of them, and I was in and out of real sick relationships, people that were sick just like me from this illness that I have. And all I did was I always worked. I've always worked, and I hid my addiction. My addiction went like this. I worked 3 to 11, 11 to 7, I got high. 7 o'clock in the morning when the birds chirped, party was over.
Mm.
And I did this for 13 years, and I say 13 years because 8 years old I picked up alcohol and weed, and I know this is a progressive disease, so
mm-hmm.
my disease is more, and I tried different things, and when I got to the end, I was drinking, smoking weed, and smoking crack, and I worked 3 to 11, 11 to 7, I did this, And 7 in the morning when I would hear the birds chirping, I would stop. And I would sleep till 1 o'clock to do it all over again. In 2004, I was hitting bottoms. I was so tired of living like that. And I didn't know how to get out of it. So I've always liked reading. So I grabbed on to reading books during my end of using. And when I would read these books, I didn't want the books to end. And at that time, my daughter was living with me, my two grandchildren, and my son was incarcerated. And I was living in Philadelphia. I had left Jersey and moved to Philadelphia. And my spirit got darker and darker and darker. I was at the bottom of the barrel, and I didn't know how to get out, so I tried books. And I started reading, and I didn't want the books to end. So I would run back to the bookstore with my grandchildren on my days off after getting paid, and I would put money in my right pocket. That would be for paying the bills. And my left pocket was for getting high. So, and in my right pocket was paying bills and trying to spend time with my grandchildren. Because mind you, my son was incarcerated, and my daughter, she was getting high too. Product of their environment. That's all they were. That's all they were shown. So that's what they did. And I would go to the bookstore in the end and ask for part two, part three of the books. And my grandchildren would say, "Grandma, can we go to the movies or can we go to the restaurant before you buy your books, please?" Because I started spending $200 and $300 on books because I didn't want the books to end because I was afraid I would pick up. So this went on for about 2004 was my bottom. This went on from January of 2004 to August of 2004. Not the using, it was change. I started, I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I didn't like how I was living, and I had a plan. January, get my income tax, get my own place, make sure it's small, where nobody could move in, and I could try to stop. But God had a better plan. I was walking down the street one day with my grandchildren, and a woman that knew me, a Muslim woman that knew me, she called me one day, and I was taking my grandchildren to the movie theater and going to get my books, of course. And she said, "I want you to meet my nephew." And I said, "You don't have a nephew. You don't even have brothers and sisters." She said, "Yes, I do." And I said, "Well, tell him to call me. I'm a size 12 with pretty hair." So he called me. And when he called, we talked on the phone. Mind you, I was living in a house with my daughter using. I had a boyfriend I was using. My two grandchildren, we would just give them our phones, give them money, just leave us alone. And that's what he picked up the phone to call and didn't even know. So I painted a picture to him. You know, I introduced myself and I said, "Well, I'm a nurse and I have a house and my daughter lives with me and my grandchildren." We talked for about 2-3 weeks. And one day out the clear blue sky, he said, "Okay, is there anything else you need to tell me?" And I said, "Well, I drank a little beer." And I said, "Why?" He said, "I just want to know." And so for a week, I was like, why did he ask me that? Yet he kept calling me every day. And from him calling me, God works in mysterious ways. And he uses people to help one another. He speaks through people, and God's time was different than mine, and his plan was much better than my plan. So he called me and asked me that same question a week later, and I cried. I said, "I drink, I smoke weed, I smoke crack, and I'm tired, and I don't know what to do. I'm so tired, and I just cried." And he said, "It's okay, it's okay." He said, "I want you to try something." And I said, try what? He said, do you have a mirror in your house? When I share this part, I experienced it all over again, what I'm about to share with everyone that's listening. And I had a big mirror in my front room. And he said, I'm going to hang up. I'm going to give you something to do. I'm going to hang up for 10 minutes, and I'm going to call you back. You promised to answer the phone? I said, yeah. So he said, I want you to look in that mirror and tell that little girl that you're sorry. And that went over the top of my head. I was like, what damn little girl? And he said, that little girl you hurt a long time ago at 8 years old. And I said, okay, I'll try it. I went to the mirror, and I looked in the mirror, and I said, I'm sorry. And I did it a second time, and I said, I'm sorry. And the third time I looked, me was looking at me without words, saying, look what you done to me. And I cried so hard. At that moment, I had a spiritual awakening and a spiritual experience and didn't know what was going on. He called me back, and I just was hysterical. And he said, welcome, welcome, welcome to your feelings. And I'm like, and he said, I want you to write down what you're feeling. Mind you, I started using at 8 years old. And so my response to that was, feel what? He said, if you feel happy, you feel sad, you feel glad, you feel mad. And I said, well, I feel sad. He said, well, write that down. And 12 days later, this man lived in Nashville, Tennessee. 12 days later, he caught the bus to Philadelphia and spent time with me, took me to my first meetings.
Wow.
And married me.
In 12 days?
Yes.
Wow.
And he put cartoon tapes on. He had 7 years sober and clean and sober. And I was
okay.
12 days when he got to Philadelphia. And he was willing. A lot of people want to stop him. A lot of people said, you don't know what you're going into. And he said, but this girl's reaching out for help, and I have to be of service. This is what we do. Plant seeds for God. And he told me later what he told his aunt and all of them. So he came to Philadelphia, took me to meetings, and then married me. And he showed me cartoon tapes. And I would say to him, first I need to let you and the audience know I fought my recovery tooth and nail. And today I can say, because the devil doesn't want me to be this way. He doesn't even want me on the phone right now. But I'm okay with that because I serve a powerful God. And
yes,
I ask him to use me, and I ask God to use me today and anytime. So he showed me cartoon tapes, and I was like, what the hell are you showing me these cartoon tapes for? He said, so you can learn to laugh. He got the Bible out and said, let's read the Bible. And I was like, you read the damn Bible. And I said, why you want me to read it? He said, so it can soften your heart. And he took time out with me when I cussed him out, when I said, F you and your 7 years and the 12-step program that you're in, you know, and I just was, but all I knew was what I knew. So I went to meetings. My first meeting I went to, this lady was celebrating 16 years, and I was 12 days clean and sober.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad to be there. I was nervous. I sat next to people. I didn't think I was like them. I thought I was different. Then after she celebrated, they asked, was anybody here for their first time? And I sunk in my chair and I raised my hand. And I said, I'm 12 days clean and sober. And they roared. They clapped, and I was like, what is going on? was any place in a long time that was glad I was there, grateful I was there. And I found out about the nature of this disease. This disease has affected me spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally. I know this disease, there's no cure for this disease, but a power greater than myself, which I choose to call God. I've always called God. I believe in God from the day that I walked into a 12-step program, but I didn't know I was an agnostic. Never been an atheist. An agnostic is someone that doubts God.
Right.
Anything I put above God, I'm agnostic. So I've learned so much in this process. I had to first admit through the 12 steps. And I've been, and my journey hasn't been easy. It's been painful. And I had to start writing. Let me go back a little. I had to start reading meditations every day, get a sponsor, call her every day. And when I put down the books and put down the drugs and the alcohol, I felt retarded. My brain felt like a sponge. I broke out in boils. I didn't know what was going on with me, but I didn't want to use, and I didn't. And I kept going to meetings. I would go to regular meetings. I would go to women meetings. I would go to step meetings. I would go to speaker meetings, and I continued to work and save money to come out here to Nashville, a place I never even heard of, only when it comes to country music. The boogeyman was scaring me. I didn't want to leave. And my husband was like, it's nothing but the boogeyman. You're going to be all right. And when I moved out here, I hadn't done any step work. I held on to the slogans. One of them is, but for the grace of God, think, 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 keep it simple, easy does it. And the people in the rooms and sold off, it's a hold on to them. They're the banister till you get to the steps. And when I got to the steps, when I got to Nashville, I got a sponsor. I continued to make meetings. I moved out here. We drove across country with no license, no insurance, on a prayer. And I still use this prayer today with license, with insurance. And I promised God I would not drive until I got my license. So my husband, his license had expired while he was there trying to work with me, you know, do God's work. And so he didn't know it. You know, I had him all crazy, you know, because he didn't know what he was coming into. So the prayer that he would say until we 18 hours to get to Nashville, God, please protect us from the hazards of the road and the police. Thy will be done, not mine. And I still say that prayer, pulling off every day with license, with insurance, every day, mm-hmm. because I need God's armor around me every day, all day.
We all do.
So,
we all do.
Yes. So when I got here, I got a sponsor. She had me write down everything that I'm powerless over. That's the first step. And explained to me about the unmanageability that was in my head and how my thinking was distorted. And then I got to the second step. And for me, that's where God is introduced to me. The second step is came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And that third step is make a decision to turn my will, my life, to the care of God. And when I got to those steps, which I still hold on to those steps today, and the 11th step and the 12 steps, praying for, my brain's getting a little crazy right now, but the 11th step is prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand, and praying for the knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. So all these things I learned through the 12 steps, and somebody shared with me, is a joke, in a recovery, and you hear in recovery sometimes. The first we'd be trying to get our brains back. Second, we try to use our brains. And then we find out all we needed was God.
Oh, that's good. It is.
Yes, yes. And I've learned through this process, God is either everything or he's nothing at all. Ooh. I've learned about trusting the process, and I pray every day. Today I pray, when I pray for forgiveness. I pray for love, purity, self-respect, honesty, unselfishness, strength, taking the right action, and trusting you, Lord, trusting your process, Lord, and praying for content. I try to surround myself with God in every area. I ask God to protect me from myself and others. I pray and ask God to take away the fear and have me be what he would want me to be. Because for me today, it's all about asking God. I love the recovery process. I love this journey that God has me on. I work with other women. I lead by example. And it's something else, questions you asked me I wanted to address.
Well, one
too.
Of the things that you were talking, it came up to my spirit. What would you say to somebody that's going through right now? Like they really want to be where you are. What say that you're talking to them. What would you say to them?
You know what, there's no coincidence, because that's what I was going to talk about.
Really?
God is so good. Yes. It's a God thing. They have so many rehabs.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to a rehab. I didn't go to jail. None of those things happened with me. I went straight to a meeting. And I held on, and I know it's all by the grace of God, because I didn't want to be clean and sober, but I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. They have many 12-step programs out here. They got AA, they have NA, they have Al-Anon for the families that are affected by us, because we don't realize when we're out there using, we don't just affect ourselves. We don't even realize we're affecting ourselves, but we affect the ones that love us. And the only suggestion I would suggest to anyone that's listening and struggling with the disease of addiction is to go online, or you can call your operator and find out where any 12-step programs are. Go to them. Let people know who you are and where you're at. And sometimes that's a little uncomfortable and painful, because this disease has kept me in bondage of self and denial. And a lot of people that struggle with this, and including myself, we be in denial because we're caught up in the grips of this disease, which is from the devil. And I would highly suggest that they find a 12-step program or go into treatment. And people that are being affected by us, the best thing I could suggest for them is to pray. Because the first step tells me I am powerless over the alcoholic. I am powerless over the addict. And that's the truth. Lack of power is our dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
And all we got to do is ask God. God works in mysterious ways. Anytime he took a drunk, crackhead, pothead like me and restored me to sanity and had me on a radio blog, that's huge.
Yes, it is. That is huge. And then you're clean and you're an example for talk about what you're doing now, because, I mean, that's a 180-degree turn, and I mean, I'm proud of your journey. I'm proud that you could stand up and talk about your journey, and I know that you're just such an example for a lot of people. So talk about what you're doing now and how your life has turned around.
Okay, well, about a year ago, I got my high school diploma.
Awesome.
Thank you. I go to the prisons and work with women. I work with women that just come up to me and ask me would I sponsor them. But what I do, I tell them, let me pray about it first. And I'll pray about it, but I don't turn my back on them. I still give them my number, take their number, and I work. I'm a responsible person, which I've always worked, but now I pay my bills. And my rent is zero every month for the last, I can say, 6 years. I'm doing the financial amends that I owed different companies. And that's where I'm at today. And I make meetings. And I get up in the morning and I pray. And thank God for another day clean and sober. At night, I try to look at my whole day and see have I hurt someone, harmed them, or talked to them bad. And then I humble myself and go to them. But first I ask God, please forgive me. And sometimes I'm a little hard on myself, you know, about some behaviors that I'm still working on, because it's about change for me, and it's about attitude and behavior. And that little girl inside of me is not scared of me today. She plays. I even got a doll baby. So that's where I'm at today. I work with the elderly. I love them so much. They are my babies. They are my babies, those souls. And they've always been, and I show up for my daughter and son today. Because I made amends to them.
Well, that's good. And direct is that amends. Relationship restored now with your son and daughter?
Yes.
Is that?
Yes.
That's good.
Yes. It's much better. And they're healing from a lot of pain that I caused them. I had to look at my part. And I show up for them, you know, but I'm not a, I let them also be self-supporting behind their own contributions, because at one time I wanted to buy their love because of what I showed them. And today I don't buy their love. If I can help them financially, if I have it, I'll help them. But what I do, I pray for them every day. And I'm available. I'm a mother. And I'm a grandmother, and they know where I'm at. And, you know, my daughter will call, or my son, and they'll say, well, you're either at work or sleeping or in a meeting or praying. What a blessing.
Is that a blessing? It is a blessing. That's the blessing.
Yes.
So you've come a mighty long way.
Yeah.
Tell families out there who are dealing with someone who is in the struggle of the disease process, and you kind of alluded to that a little bit, what would you say to families? How should they be supportive? You know, what? Give us some tips for families.
I highly suggest that family members that are struggling with seeing their loved ones like that get to the Al-Anon meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Anon is a great program. It's a great program because I even had to go because I have the disease. I've been affected by the disease, and I was raised around all these people, a big family tree of addicts and alcoholics. So my upbringing, my attitude and behavior was affected, so I started going myself. I highly suggest Al-Anon get into programs like that. That's the only one I know of because that's the one that really truly helped me. And
Al-Anon is for the families, right? Tell us a little bit about in case somebody doesn't know what it is.
Okay, Al-Anon is for family and friends who have been affected by people that have this disease. And it's a 12-step program, and it will walk you through the program and let you know and show you that you're still, no matter if you're trying to come in there, fix, manage, and control, is about knowing that you're still powerless over the alcoholic, over the addict. And it's caused you unmanageability because a lot of times we want to be enablers and not trust God. We want to have our self-will all caught up in it. And our and it's painful, you know. And Al-Anon is a good program for families and friends that have been affected as a result of this disease and don't understand what this disease has done to us and what it's done to them. Because a person that is dealing with a person that's struggling with this disease, most of the time they get just as sick as the one that's using.
Yes. I've been there as a family member of somebody, more than one person, my dad and both my brothers, me and my mom, kind of we enabled them in a lot of ways and really didn't know what to do sometimes, but a lot of this, the whole point of the program is that at a certain point you have to hand people over to God and trust that he will take care of them. They are his children too, and his divine interest is in them also.
And learn, then you're right. It's about learning to let go and let God. I can share experience that I have with that. When I moved out here, I left my son incarcerated, my daughter on drugs, and my grandchildren there with my daughter. And when I left, they were crying and pulling on me, and I turned around crying and saying, Grandma and Mom can't help y'all till she learned to help herself. So when I got out here, I got a sponsor, and I would call every day, what you doing, what your mom doing, did y'all eat, and obsessing every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared it with my sponsor at the time, and she said to me, I suggest you don't call. And I said, what? I said, are you crazy? She said, no. So she seen that I couldn't do it. So she said, okay, we'll try this. Call every other day for a week. Then the next week, call every 2 days. Then the next week, every 3 days. Then the next week, every 4 days. And my obsession, my trying to play God and doing this, taking the suggestion that she gave me, I learned through it. I had to let go and let God and trust God. And know that God doesn't have grandchildren. We're all his children.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It is.
And when I did that, my daughter, she doesn't get high today. She works and she's responsible. My grandchildren, one of them works. She has her own place. They moved out here. They got their license. They bought cars. One is getting ready to graduate from high school, go to college. So it's all about trusting God and trusting the process. And it's easier said than done in the beginning. And so the sponsor I had took me through that because I'm stubborn. I want to fix, manage, and control. And I had to learn through the pain to let go and let God and trust him, have faith in him, believe in him, and have hope.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
I want to, if I can, share a poem that I wrote when I was out there on drugs, and it never left my head. But I need to write it down. But is it okay to
say the poem? Oh, sure.
Okay. This is how I've seen myself and where I'm at today. And I wrote this way before I put down the drugs. God had me sitting on a bus, a Greyhound bus, going to California, waking up 5:00 in the morning. Looking outside the bus, and I seen a road, a path going to heaven. And God said, pick up a pen or a pencil and start writing. And it goes like this. One day God said, there is to be a girl born through my decree. The angels agreed, and that was me. When I was young, I was as pure as water. As I grew older, I went out of order. I grew up in a state that I grew to hate through man-made religion was my escape. From a child mentality to a wild mentality, where was I to go to search for reality? And I found a loving God.
Wow. Wow. So. That is awesome, and it's a good way to end the program. I cannot tell you how much you have inspired me today. And God
Thank
was
you.
Truly in the program. I do know Geraldine, but not some of the things. You have been through so much. And it's inspiring that God has brought you to this place and using all of that, you know, for you to help somebody else find their way. Yeah, you were lost and in some dark places, but you found the light, and now you're a light bearer, and you can travel and help bring light to somebody else in that dark place. And that's what we're all supposed to do. Thank you so much for allowing God to use you.
And thank you. And if anybody gets something out of this, I thank God. And if anybody ever wants me to speak anywhere, they could come through your blog, and you know how to contact me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your being willing and open, and thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, and God bless you, too.
God bless you. Well, this is it. This is Soul in the City, where we inspire to take people higher and higher in the spirit. I hope that somebody was touched today. I hope that somebody was inspired, found direction. And it begins with that cell in yourself, just what Geraldine was saying, that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And when you've reached that place in your soul and your spirit where you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, but that is cluing you, that's God shaking you, saying you can change. And I just want to encourage somebody that the power to change is within you through God. When you're connected to Him, get that connection, and all you have to do is say, God, I need you. And He is there because He's in you, around you, and all around you. You move, live, and have your being in Him. So if you're in a dark place, know that there's light. About. So this is Soul in the City, where we inspire to go higher and higher in the spirit and be great because you are. Be magnificent because you are, because you're connected. You're in a magnificent and a great God. Good night. And thanks, Geraldine. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night. Bye-bye.